And so we come to the Word of God for today. It's found in Joshua, the 5th chapter. We will read the whole chapter, verses 1 through 15. Hear the word of the Lord. Now when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until we had crossed over, their hearts melted, and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again." So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the Israelites at Gibeath Haraloth. Now this is why he did so. All those who came out of Egypt, all the men of military age, died in the desert on the way after leaving Egypt. All the people that came out had been circumcised, but all the people born in the desert during the journey from Egypt had not. The Israelites had moved about in the desert 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So he raised up their sons in their place, and these were the ones Joshua circumcised. They were still uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. After the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained where they were in camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." So that place has been called Gilgal to this day. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites. But that year, they ate the produce of Canaan. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him and asked, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" "Neither," he replied, "but as the commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, "What message does my Lord have for his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. This is the word of the Lord. It seems that God is always preparing us for what is coming later. On the one hand, we're grateful. We like to be prepared. On the other hand, this means that we're almost always going through some sort of training. And training is not always pleasant. On our journey, God helps us in many ways. One of the ways that we've consistently seen in the book of Joshua is through a call to remember. Remember the past. Remember God's faithfulness. Remember what God has done for us. We've learned the importance of memorials, among other things, so far. These serve to strengthen our faith as we recall what God has done. But they also keep us on the path that He would set before us, because we can journey trusting that God will continue to act faithfully towards us. The events recorded in Joshua form direct connections. We have connections to the past that we can clearly see. We connect the Red Sea and the Jordan River. There's a continuity of events that reaffirms God is with the people. We connect the 12 spies sent out by Moses with the 2 spies sent by Joshua, Both of them went to spy out the land. One when they were trying to go, both when they were trying to go into the land. We connect the Exodus from Egypt with the Exodus from the wilderness, where they actually journey into that land of promise. There is a leaving behind. There is an anticipation of something new. Today, more connections are made. There's the connection of circumcision that we will talk about. There's the connection of Passover that we will discuss. And there's the connection of theophany, an appearance of the Lord to an individual or a group. As God had appeared to Moses, so now we see God appearing to Joshua. Once again, reaffirming the promise, as I was with Moses, so also I will be with you. All of these connections prepare the people for the upcoming battles, the first of which lies just ahead of them across the plains of Jericho in that mighty walled city. And so in today's text, we see clearly preparation. God is getting everyone ready for what is coming next. So let's consider this preparation that is ongoing. And again, we want to remind all of ourselves that this connection from Joshua and the book, and you know, they're coming out of a phase into a new phase. They're stepping away from one part of the journey and embracing a new part of their journey. In the same way, as we come out of COVID, as we once again start to gather together, we're asking God, what is the new that you have for us? What is it that we're leaving behind? And these things continue to be a part of what we ask as we go through these questions. And the first thing that we see in verse 1 is God is preparing the context. Again, what does verse 1 say? Now, when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings along the coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan before the Israelites until we had crossed over, their hearts melted and they no longer had the courage to face the Israelites. This is about God preparing the context for the next steps that are coming. Those next steps of engagement with the peoples that are in the promised land. Those next steps of purifying their own hearts so that their lives are in a good place when it comes to listening to and obeying what God would want them to do. It talks about God preparing actually the powers that be, that were in the land, that were hostile towards the people of God. Think about this with me for just a minute. The whole army, all of the fighting men, just underwent circumcision. No anesthesia, no Tylenol, no codeine, no ibuprofen. Ouch. They go through this experience, and it's going to take time to recover. The enemy, if the enemy had the courage to engage the army at that point, surely Israel could have been wiped out because they had no fighting men left who could fight. I'm reminded of the story of Jacob's sons when they were traveling in the land and they deceitfully had a tribe of people circumcise themselves in anticipation of something. And while they were circumcised and recovering, those same sons of Jacob went in and wiped out those people. And that's kind of the situation that was reversed, and the people of Israel were in that situation. And so that God had allowed the story to spread of his miraculous work. They weren't afraid of the Israelites, they were afraid of the God of the Israelites. When his miraculous work had spread through the stories, people were, how can we fight that? That's impossible. And so they were left alone to actually go through this rite of circumcision and recover. God prepares the context. Remember that God is always working, whether we see it or not. God is faithful, and we sang just a few minutes ago, you never failed me yet. You've never failed me yet. Now, we can look back and sometimes in our lives and say, man, that was tough. We can look back at times and say, boy, that didn't seem right. And yet it's a matter of interpretation. It's a matter of how we will understand what we went through and what perspective from which we will examine those realities. God does not change. God is faithful. And though we may not always understand, we cling to that reality and hold to the knowledge that one day it will all be seen to be beautiful. And God is sometimes preparing us for what's next. Next, we see that God is preparing the people in verses 2 through 12. We see that God is preparing the people through circumcision. And so that's the method that he begins using first. And we remember that circumcision was a sign of the covenant given to Abraham in Genesis chapter 17. That is where God implemented this practice with Abraham. And it symbolizes a separation. As the foreskin is separated, you have been separated unto God. You are set apart for his purposes as his possession. And we read something very interesting in verse 9. It says, then the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the place has been called Gilgal to this day, rolled away. Gilgal. So the reproach of Egypt has been rolled away from you. It has been removed from you. What is the reproach of Egypt? And you can certainly find many diverse opinions, but the common theme among most of the scholars that look at this is going back to the covenant of Abraham, which had not been practiced by the people. And particularly in Egypt, where circumcision was not unheard of, but it was reserved for the priests and for the elite of Egypt. It was not given to the common people, much less to a people who were in slavery. And so they were not able to continue to practice this covenant sign of belonging to God, of being the people of God as they were in Egypt. And so now that is rolled away. That shame is gone. The covenant is reestablished. Belonging is confirmed. You are my people. I am your God. And God is preparing then the people through circumcision to understand that they are in a special relationship with him. It is now, shame is removed from them. They can now live in this covenant where God says, I love you and you are mine. And now they can feel that they are giving the same response back to this loving God. We are yours. Yes, we belong to you. But we have to remember, circumcision is not simply physical. It is about the heart. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 6 says this, the Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul and live. And so we see in this verse that, yes, the physical is to actually symbolize something unseen, something spiritual. That the heart is to be set apart to God. The heart is to belong to God. The heart is to love God. That's what it says right here. It says, so that you may love God. Circumcision was given so that the people would learn to love God more as they saw and experienced and understood God's love for them, so that you may live. This is the purpose of God, which is important that we understand, because in just a minute, we're going to talk about the purposes of God and what those might be. God says, that you may love me and live. Romans 8, chapter 2, verses 28 and 29 say this, a man is not a Jew if he is only one outwardly, nor is circumcision merely outward and physical. No, a man is a Jew if he is one inwardly, and circumcision is circumcision of the heart by the Spirit, not by the written code. Such a man's praise is not from men, but from God. And so we see once more reiterated in the New Testament, the same truth iterated in the Old Testament in Deuteronomy. It is not about something external. It is about something internal. This was a major point of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. You are looking for an external righteousness, but God is looking for an internal righteousness, not one that makes laws of actions, but one that transforms character into something that pleases God and enables one to walk with God. And so we find that God is looking for something internal to happen inside of us, transformation. We also understand in the New Testament that circumcision is fulfilled in the new covenant of Christ through the cross and resurrection. Colossians chapter 2, verses 11 and 12 says this, in him you were also circumcised in the putting off of your sinful nature, not with circumcision done by the hands of men, but with circumcision done by Christ. Christ is the one who circumcises, having been buried with him in baptism and raised with him through your faith in the power of God who raised him from the dead. And so there's the Apostle Paul in his letter to the Colossians makes this connection of circumcision and baptism. Christ is the one who circumcises us as we believe in him, as we accept him. And it is symbolized or confirmed in that act of baptism. And so today, it is baptism that symbolizes that entry into the people of God, that belonging to a greater community. And so we find that it is ultimately once more fulfilled in Jesus Christ. God also prepares the people through the practice of Passover. We find this in verses 10 through 12. And what goes on here? Circumcision actually is the precursor that enables them to celebrate Passover. We find back in Egypt, before the Passover, there was, that circumcision that is supposed to be happening. That's what we need to see. And so Passover was in departing Egypt, they celebrated it. And then in the desert, 2 years later, according to Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 4, they celebrated it once more. Again, we see those memorials. We see those connections to the past. We hear that call. Remember what God has done. Remember the practices in which you have engaged that helped you understood your story in God's story as they weave together to form that beautiful tapestry that at the end will be revealed for all to see. And so this generation only has a slight memory, the memory of childhood, because they were all small. They were young. And so it's like a child's memory of Christmas and now practicing it as an adult, how things change, how perspectives will change. Connections are being remade. God is using rites and memorials, again, to establish connections. He's growing their understanding and maturing their spirituality through these actions and through these connections to the past. He's helping them to form new habits. And we talk about habits because habits are so important in life. Establishing good habits, leaving not so good habits. Often the habits that we establish they do direct our response to the situations that we encounter. We need holy habits. We need to establish holy habits. How do we form habits? I've said this before, I'll say it again. Habits are formed by making intentional choices consistently in the same direction over a long period of time. These rites and memorials help us to do that. We look back and we remember, and that gives direction towards our future. As they celebrate Passover, once again, their hearts are being prepared. Their minds are being prepared. The connections to the past and the works of God are giving them faith to move into the future. Once more, ultimately, Jesus Christ is our Passover lamb and is the fulfillment of Passover. We are set apart to God and God's work. We are saved through all that God has done through his work on the cross. In verses 13 through 15, we continue to see preparation. This time it's preparation of the leader. And again, we see a heart focus. There's a lot that could be said about that I've left out in all of these stories. But as we look at Joshua, it says, when Joshua was near Jericho, that's the word that it uses. Joshua was near Jericho. And you kind of wonder, well, the army is all over here. The camp is all over here. Joshua has somehow moved across the plain, it would seem, and gotten closer to the city. Perhaps he went out to ponder how they might engage the city when God calls them to move forward. Perhaps he was looking for vulnerable sections in the wall. I say perhaps because this is all speculation. Perhaps he just felt stuck. What do we do? How are we going to do this? I don't have a clue. Perhaps he just went out to think and to say, God, help me. But in the midst of that, he meets what I would call a strange stranger. He meets a warrior, a man with a drawn sword. And Joshua asks him whose side he is on. Are you for us or are you for them? Notice that was the only option in Joshua's mind. You're here or you're here. There's no middle ground. Are you for us or are you for them? And the man responds by throwing out the question and saying neither. Wrong question. He rejects the question as inappropriate. And I think that there's a lot that we can learn from this question, with Joshua asking, whose side are you on? When the man says neither, it's almost shocking, since one would assume that God would be on the side of the Israelites. What do we note from this response? God is on God's side, for lack of a better way of putting it. God is on God's side. We often, in our assumptions and presumptuousness, assume that God is on our side. Why do we make that assumption? Why do we believe that God is on our side? And even if God is on our side, that should never lead us to a place of arrogance, but a place of dependence, a place of gratitude, a place of humility. We're not to gloat when we see something happen to someone who we think, God's not on their side. You see, we often misunderstand God. What do I mean by God is on God's side? I mean that God is for his kingdom, not ours. Jesus came into a society that expected God's kingdom to look a certain way. And Jesus said, No. My kingdom is not like that. My kingdom is not a kingdom where I'm sitting up on top and letting everybody serve me. Jesus said the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That's a different kind of kingdom. And that is the kingdom that God is for. God is for his values, not ours. Only as our values and purposes line up with God's may we trust that God is on our side, or God is for us. What are these kingdom values? God is for love. God is for mercy. Look at Jesus. God is for justice. God is for forgiveness. God is for righteousness. God is for peace. God is for gentleness. God is for benevolence. God is for joy. God is for empathy. You see, this is the kingdom of God. This is who God is for. God is for God's kingdom. God is for the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, meekness, self-control. So the question that comes to us is, who are we for? What are we for? Who am I for? What are the things that we stand for and work for? Are these the things of God? Joshua, finding himself corrected and humbled, falls with his face to the ground. He finally has eyes to see reality. He had been in the presence of God, but didn't recognize it. How often this is the case. We fail to see. Our perspective is somewhat off. We see in this the connection once more between Joshua and Moses. Moses had the burning bush. Joshua meets with the commander of the Lord's armies. We have the same thing, that connection to, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And one final element from today's passage, understanding the battle. Is there, as we're preparing for the battle, understand, have a right perspective of what this battle is. God is shaping Joshua's perception, even with the kinds of questions he should ask. He says, Joshua, wrong question. Joshua said, are you for us or for our enemies? Neither. Neither. Essentially, the appearance of the commander of the Lord's armies teaches that it is not Israel's army that will ultimately decide the outcome of the encounter at Jericho, nor are the visible armies the only armies that are present. Understand that there is a battle going on that is beyond what we see and what we know. Ultimately, it is God who is the one who will overthrow all those who claim to be gods, but are not. We can find herein a precursor to the story of King Jehoshaphat in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, when the kings gather together against him. And God responds by saying, the battle is not yours, the battle belongs to the Lord. Ultimately, the battle belongs to the Lord. And this commander says, hey, I'm here. I've got the armies of God. Look to me. Depend on me. We see in Psalms chapter 44, verses 1 through 8, the people of God later reflecting on this very event. And this is what it says. We have heard with our ears, O God. Our fathers have told us what you did in their days, in days long ago. With your hand, you drove out the nations and planted our fathers. You crushed the peoples and made our fathers flourish. It was not by their sword that they won the land, nor did their arm bring them victory. It was your right hand, your arm, and the light of your face, for you loved them. You are my king and my God, who decrees victories for Jacob. Through you, we push back our enemies. Through you, we will trample down our foes. I do not trust in my bow. My sword does not bring me victory. But you give us victory over our enemies. You put our adversaries to shame. In God we make our boast all day long, and we will praise your name forever. Selah. So how do we respond? How do we prepare? How do we let God prepare us for what is coming? First, look back. Memorials and connections to God's past faithfulness need to be recalled What are the stories that have informed your life, that have formed our life as a community together? It might be good to actually write some of these down. And then as we line them up, we see a consistent story of God working towards God's purposes. Next, look inward. Reflect in the presence of the Holy Spirit, turning that eye inward. Confess, renounce, and leave those bad habits, sin, if you will, hidden or not so hidden. Intentionally, in this place before the Holy Spirit, choose holiness. Lord, I choose what is right, what is loving, what is kind, what is good. God, I choose your purposes. God, I choose your kingdom. We need to make this internal, volitional decision and then follow up by acting in a purposeful direction. Look upward. First, listen to what God is saying. We're reminded that he says the battle is mine. Turn your eyes upward. Gaze upon him. Again, one of our songs talked about God, you're beautiful, the beauty of God. Do we gaze upon God in this fashion? Our vision of God determines the limits of what we are willing to believe and to do. We will only live according to God as our vision is of God. Trust in his power, not our lack of it. Finally, look forward. See the vision. Where is God calling you? Where is God calling us to move? Recognize the obstacles, but don't fear them. We will face challenges, but again, our vision of God enables us to see that the solution is far greater than the challenges that stand in our way. Sisters and brothers, choose to follow God's path, leading in his purposes to building his kingdom.